Hello and welcome to another edition of the Above Politics Show. I'm Martin Bain.
And I'm Justin Case.
And today we've got a special interview for you this week. But before we get to that, we have a special request for our audience and all you ATS members.
That's right. We need your help.
We're not just going to break the talk show mold. We're going to try and throw it away. We're going to try and do something different.
That's right. The Above Politics Show has gone global, which means we're available for download from some of the best pod feeds on the net.
So here's what we want to do with our newfound success, and we've earned it. We want your suggestions for who we should interview. Now, come on. Let's be serious for a moment, which I know is probably quite hard for Justin and I, but we will try. We can't expect to get world leaders just yet, although I am working on a few. But everyone else is fair game as far as Justin and I are concerned.
Hey, if we're going to be truly above politics, we've got to think outside the box. That means talking to people who work for politicians and people in other professions. More honest professions, I might add.
Ah, honest professions. Politicians and honesty. We could start a nice debate on that one. I'm sure you're tired of hearing the same old partisan pandering and gobbledygook and chit-chat on the radio. Do you know somebody who's good at what they do?
Tell us who inspires you, and who knows, we might put them on the show.
If you have something to say that you're just not hearing from anyone else, tell us. We know people, and sometimes we can even look in certain ATS members' black books occasionally. We might better get you some airtime.
The Above Politics Show is one of the fastest growing platforms on the net today. And believe me, I know, because I try to measure it all the time. We bring you news and analysis with just a little bit of fun to wash away that yucky aftertaste you get from having so much of the mainstream media poured on you.
Mainstream media poured on you. Not
it's
nice.
It's the best word we can use and still be FCC compliant.
Absolutely. We were going to do a skit around pancakes and maple, but it just wouldn't have got past the censors. So we're going to bring you the voices and opinions from people you just won't hear on any other show.
There's an old American saying that all politics is local. That means the roots of any political opinion can be traced back to the average person.
But we don't have many average people on AboveTopSecret.com, though, Justin. Politicians don't always know what's best. That's true no matter what country you live in.
If you want to clue us in to a good interview, grab your keyboard and surf on over to AboveTopSecret.com. Find the ATS Mix forum and click on our most recent show thread.
Or surf on over to the Above Politics forum on ATS and chat with us in real time. ATS has its own private messaging system, which means you can email us privately and confidentially.
We always respect your confidentiality in spite of what you may hear on the street.
Ah, being famous, having people open doors for me and allow me to travel for free. Those heady days will come one day. But we're already famous, and those things already happened for Justin and I. But we're already famous, and we have prizes to give away. During last week's trivia challenge, we're already famous, and we have prizes to give away. During last week's challenge, I asked, what if someone had the Chiltern 100, what would they be doing? And Expert 11, who strangely isn't from the United Kingdom but from New Zealand, who seems to know a great deal about UK politics, correctly answered the question. And it's an office that a sitting MP would accept when he wants to resign from the House of Commons outside of a general election. So Tony Blair, when he left the House of Commons, accepted the, in essence, the stewardship of the Chiltern 100s so that he could resign and leave Parliament. So, expert, 500, I was going to say only 100 points, Justin, but no, there's 500 points, which I believe have already found their way to you.
Yes, indeed. And these are not just any applause points. These are certified as homemade by ATS professionals with nothing but the best materials.
Best materials, homegrown. We could always argue about whether they're made with American or British materials, but with either is good enough for our members. So I tried to stump the members last week. It's your go, Justin.
Okay, well, here's my try for this week's trivia challenge. In 1902, President Theodore Teddy Roosevelt was out hunting. Now, while he was out sneaking and peeking through the weeds, he comes across a very majestic bear. This animal is so impressive that he just can't shoot it. Well, one thing leads to another, and this makes the national news. And believe it or not, this incident is actually what inspired an American inventor to come up with the teddy bear. Now, my question for 500 applause points is, what location, what geographical place did Teddy Roosevelt encounter this magnificent bear?
That's interesting. I was going to say, though, the story wouldn't work as well with Dick Cheney because he'd have just shot the thing, wouldn't he? Just like he shoots people.
Well, I think he specializes in lawyers, though. I don't think he's so big on the whole bear thing.
I thought he shot some kind of gamekeeper or some kind of member of staff. Was it down on George Bush's ranch in Texas?
A quail hunting preserve down in the state somewhere, and I believe it was in Texas. Somebody's going to correct me on that, but Mr. Cheney was out hunting with one of his lawyer buddies, and you can argue that he was out hunting one of his lawyer buddies.
Does that mean you hunt ex-vice presidents of the United States?
What, me? Well, no, officially, no.
But if it's a quail reserve, maybe they were doing something useful with Dan Quayle.
You know, I don't know where he is these days, and you know, I just haven't thought of him very much. Honestly, I assume that unlike Jimmy Carter, he must still be alive. So,
yes, let's not bring that one up, Justin, because one day we'll have to take responsibility for killing off Jimmy Carter early. Hey, maybe we should ask him if he wants to be on the show, and we can apologize to him.
I'll see if I can muster up the courage to do that. And speaking of courage, this week we've brought you a real firecracker of an interview.
That's right. We couldn't scratch up another politician or someone who works for them, but we didn't have to.
Nope, not this time. Today we're bringing you a fellow broadcaster.
Not sure that's that good an idea, Justin. She's going to make us look silly and bad, probably.
Well, you know, I can think of worse things to do on a day like today. It's very nice here at the ATS compound, and as long as it's not raining, I'm willing to try new things.
Okay, let's not keep our members in suspense anymore. We have Fern Crossley, who does a morning drive time show out of Macomb, Mississippi. I assume that's in the what we'd regard as the deep south of the states. And her radio station is WAKK 1140 AM, and according to insider sources, she is very big into American politics.
We'll introduce you to Fern right after this break. Okay, now let's just do these few lines here. Start with, I'm Martin Bain.
Okay, fine. I just didn't know what the logic
was.
That's
okay. That's okay.
Hey, I need someone sensible at the other end of the line. I'm Martin Bain, and you're listening to the Above Politics Show. Justin and I are about to speak with American talk show host Fern Crossley.
Okay, now all we have to do is we'll just get her dialed in here.
Say something nice? What? Come on, Justin. Me say something nice? Yeah, of course I will. Right, let's go. Close that.
Okay, here we go. I've got the number. I'm going to dial this in here.
The secret confidential number. Da-da-da. Isn't it amazing? I've read this script two or three times, and I even started to memorize it, and you still trip up over words.
Oh, I've done it a few times already here. No question about it.
And then you're thinking, let's put an ab lib in here, and your brain just gets confused, and you think, oh, no, where do I want to go? Where do I want to go? Shoot me now, shoot me now.
Hello, Fern, how are you today?
Well, hey, just great, down here in Mississippi.
Well, this is a big deal for Martin, because he comes from Bristol, England, and I don't think he actually knows much about the deep American South.
Oh, he doesn't. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm a transplant from Southern California, and I came to the deep of Mississippi, and really, it's quite awesome. It's quite an experience of America, the heart of America.
Golly, because unfortunately, the only things I know about Mississippi or seen about Mississippi are probably on TV programs, which are probably the worst way to understand or perceive.
Well, one of the things is that the perception is for a lot of people, especially African Americans, that they don't want to come back to Mississippi because of the history during the 60s and after the Civil War and then Jim Crow and segregation and all kinds of laws and things like that, and a lot of things that have happened to a lot of people here in Mississippi. And but if Mississippi gets healed, this whole nation gets healed. And so there's a process of reconciliation between the races, and that a healing that's been going on. But sorry to say, what's happening with Senator Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton is causing a little rift going on. So we're sort of weathering the storm and, you know, discussing the issues and what's affecting Mississippi.
Well, I noticed that when I did some background research, that the average voter turnout for Mississippi during a primary election is 4 to 6%, but you guys mustered 10.1% this time. So I imagine a lot of people felt like they had a stake in what's going on right now.
Well, one thing is that in the African-American community is that they really didn't think that Senator Barack Obama really had a chance. And then eventually things started to change. And then because of his campaigning through the Internet and so many younger people really Internet savvy, this changing the way the voting process works. And so they got really gung-ho. And they're challenging their older parents. And I think that's happening in all communities, too, because of that. Whether you're for Obama or Clinton or even McCain, the young people are getting ready to make a difference because they're all suffering the same thing. You know, high gas prices, you know, no jobs, all kinds of different things that are affecting everybody, regardless of their social, economic, or racial exposure.
But that's true. The dollar just does not seem to care what color you are. That's for sure.
No, but it doesn't.
Fern, do you believe that electing Barack Obama, electing Hillary Clinton, electing a Democrat is actually going to change what these people actually feel?
I think that there's going to have to be a great education reform in Mississippi as well as the United States. In the state of Mississippi, they spend probably about $7,000 per student and in education. And in the prison reform, they spend about $20,000 per year. That's a mindset that has to change. We have the city I live in, there's about 13,000 people. 13,000 students drop out of school per year. So we have got a mass, it's just so many things that have gone on in the last 40 or 50 years that it's all coming to fruition, and we're all going to have to work together to make the difference. And so whether it's Barack Obama or Senator Hillary Clinton or even John McCain, the people are going to have to say, hey, these are the things, this is what we want you to focus on. We want you to focus on education. We want you to focus on energy, but not as a result of taking away from stopping farmers planting food for us to eat. We need you to think of the common good for everyone.
But why are politicians in this election, in the presidential elections this year, going to change? What motivation is there for them to change and not just, you know, almost say, thank you very much, the U.S. electorate, I've listened to you, but I'm just going to carry on, and what's going to happen is going to happen, and it's going to be like it has been for the last 100, 150 years. What fundamentally do you think has changed?
That change has stopped. That kind of thinking has stopped because there has to be a paradigm shift because the people are so incensed on what has happened to them. Can you imagine that you were working in California and you were making quite a large income due to the fact that you had your college degree, you had your master's, or even your doctorate, and all that that you were in the technology field was outsourced to India, or say that you were in Pennsylvania and all the jobs of car industry, they were outsourced to other countries. Everyone is feeling the pinch, and so politics as usual is not going to work anymore because the people are becoming, they're really becoming incensed on what has happened to them.
But
if they want
balance,
America to...
People have got so used to having cheap products. I mean, you know, I've just had some friends who have come back from, you know, doing the Disney experience, and they went to Walmart and they were buying Levi's jeans for costing us £7 with the exchange rate. I just think that's an interesting thing that people, you say, Vern, are up in arms because manufacturing jobs and high-tech jobs are being outsourced overseas. But then the American people still want to be able to buy all the products they buy very cheaply. And I can't see how you can reconcile the both of having jobs in the US and the consumers having cheap, ready products of electronics or food.
It's all through transition. I'll give you an example. We went through Katrina here. In Southwest Mississippi and Louisiana. And Katrina was an educational mandate that taught everybody that, hey, we are all in this same boat. We had no food. We had no water. We had no gas. We had no electricity. Thousands of people died in Louisiana and the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. And for those that went through that experience, we have learned so much, and we see the same thing happening today. And in reference to getting cheap products, a lot of people are not even buying from the Walmarts anymore because of what has happened, because the Walmart employees don't get the benefits of health care. They only can work so many hours. Then we have people that have been working in the chicken industry that have college degrees. And so they're seeing a pattern that somebody is a Pinocchio, a Geppetto, that's pulling the strings that is creating this atmosphere of globalization. So what can we do to make a difference? How can we change? And so people are saying, hey, I'm going to have to work with somebody that maybe I've never wanted to work with before. We have a lot of people that are from other countries, the Hispanic community, that come in here. And we've had to pass legislation. If you do hire them, they have to have their green card. You just can't bring in people illegals here and take jobs from the people that are already here. And so the politician and those that have been elected to office are going to hear from the people. And Justin is always talking about this. If you want to make a difference, you, the people, are going to have to make it. And they're starting to hear from the people.
And that's something I actually have to absolutely agree with you, Fern. I'm a big fan of, well, if you don't vote, you can't complain. The only, and I'd be interested to see what you think about this one. I passionately believe that every election, yeah, I should go to my polling station. The issue I sometimes have is that there's nobody on the candidate list that I think is worthy of my vote. So I'm a big fan of saying there should be a box, you know, the classic Eddie Murphy move, none of the above, because I believe that. But because interesting, it would be, see, if you've got, like you were saying, in your town's got 13,000 people, let's say maybe half of them are entitled to vote, wouldn't it be interesting to see that when, you know, there's an election for the sheriff, for the mayor or whatever, that, you know, actually 5,000 people voted, but only 1,000 people actually voted for the person that got the top job? That, I think, would be a very salutary lesson, because then they'd know that over, you know, four times more people actually didn't want them to have the job, or couldn't even be bothered to say, I agree with you.
And, you know, I think when we went into this millennium here, something happened in the with people's psyche. Because here in the South, where people that have had the lowest, probably the lowest paying jobs, you know, people have two and three jobs just so that they can keep a roof over their head, so they can keep their children in school. You know, that's a sad commentary on a state within the United States of America, that people have to have that many jobs. Then you see everybody around here with lawnmowers doing lawns because it rains here so much, and that's one means of employment that they don't have to pay, well, they don't pay taxes on, you know. And so people are becoming more creative in how to survive and then reduce their, you know, getting rid of their credit cards, getting rid of their debt. So people are now more riding their bicycles because they can't afford almost $4 for their SUV. We'll probably start seeing motorcycles, a lot more trend in that, you know. There's just all kinds of things that are going to come out of the American psyche of survival, and to demand that those people that are elected in office come back and work together and stop having all this bitter fighting between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Speaking of bitter infighting and the matter of pumping gas, what's going on with Hillary Clinton from your perspective? Because she certainly seems to be walking into the wind uphill, because the popular vote is certainly not favoring her right now.
Well, you know, she was quite excited after Pennsylvania. I saw her at the gas pump with a trucker, and I really think Hillary Clinton did not think that Senator Barack Obama was going to do what he was going to do. Do you think that she really thought that he was going to have that much of a chance? Didn't she think she was a shoo-in at that?
I think she certainly underestimated him. The only thing she's got going in her favor right now is that after he made his century-making speech on race, I think that he accidentally raised the bar just a little too high, so now that he can't even reach it. Because in light of his increased expectations, he's been dogged by the Jeremiah Wright scandal, and he's made a series of remarks. And I'm referring to the whole matter of punishing his kids with babies, and then there's the whole bitter God and guns thing. And I'm from where I sit, these are rookie mistakes, which is what you'd expect from a person who has come to the national scene for the very first time. But I'm wondering if the cumulative effect of the whole thing is just circumstance, or if there's some more evil politics going on here.
Well, I think there's some more evil politics going on. Who did he come out of the clear blue sky and says, hey, I am going to run for president of the United States? Or is it something like a long time ago there was a movie with Robert Redford, and the movers and shakers that no one know anything about said, we are going to pick this man to run for president, because he will do our bidding. And during the course of the movie, then Robert Redford changed his mind, determined that he was not going to be a Pinocchio for these movers, and he was going to really run for president of the United States. Do you think it's possible that there were people that went to Senator Obama as a result of that famous speech that he made in the convention of 2000, Democrat convention, and said, hey, we like what you're doing. We want to see you become a United States senator. And then from then, now we want to see that you run as for the president of the United States. You've got all that which takes up that we think that you're going to really be, that you would do good. And then all of a sudden, the rug is pulled out from him.
Now, he's no Manchurian candidate, at least knock on wood, I hope not. But you have to wonder, especially at what the Clintons are thinking. Now, here at AboveTopSecret.com, this is the home of conspiracy theory. And there's a lot of speculation going on right now that she realizes she cannot have the top job, so she may be in this just to mess him up so that he loses to John McCain.
Or now, how old would she be if she doesn't get it? She would want to run for 2012. Would she be in her 70s? Like John McCain is?
64.
She would be 64. Okay. Why not the determination to say, okay, we're going to have to come together. The Democrat Party says, Hillary, you can get some of these larger states. We know you can pull them in. Barack Obama, we know that you can pull the others in. That would, together, you could beat anybody that the Republican Party would have. And right now it looks like it's John McCain. If that happened, and they can convince Senator Obama to take the VP, said, look, we want you, we see what you can do, and we want you to be this joint ticket, and we'll keep Bill Clinton out, and you'll run as a team. What do you think would happen?
The Republicans would be a much smaller minority in Congress than they are, but holy cow, I mean, Barack and Hillary, they're just like, wow. So how do you mend fences like that?
Well, you know what? They're going to have to mend fences, because when was it in the 80s that when Jimmy Carter was going to run again, that Senator Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, almost did a filibuster against him, and the party, they came in there mad and they went out mad. Okay, and they don't want that to happen again. So that's when they initiated the superdelegate ability of all these elected officials and certain other people throughout the United States to be these superdelegates so that people, who whatever would happen, that they would leave being, hey, we've got a bigger fight than what we've been fighting. Now you've got a global shutdown, it seems like, in economics that is happening to the United States. And then all the other things of infrastructure that's breaking down, the morals that are just totally seem to be in such an array. So you've got all this going on. So they're going to have to say, okay, we got to come to this table, and we're going to have to work this out together.
Either that or a whole lot of scotch tape. That's going to be a tough one because who now, from what I see, whoever does not get the top job is going to have a lot of disaffected followers. If Hillary Clinton doesn't get the presidency, then there's going to be a lot of white folks that are going to be mad about that. Mm-hmm. And if Barack doesn't get the presidency, there will also be a lot of black folks mad about that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think also, too, with Barack Obama's former pastor, Dr. Jeremy Wright, and the different things that he's been saying in the last three, well, what he said on Bill Moyer's show, the NAACP Freedom Banquet, and then the Washington Press Corps' breakfast, that Jeremy Wright is trying to say that the attack is not only on him but on black pastors. Now, we had an article in our paper today and stating that it's not an attack on black pastors. He made his bed, and he said the things, and he's going to have to do it by himself. So maybe that gambit is not going to work, that pawn in the game. And so I think that if Hillary Clinton is the front runner, she's going to be for the president and for the vice president, that if Bill Clinton gets on his, hey, I'm sorry, I made mistakes, and does a little cooling of the heels with people, especially what happened in South Carolina, that the Jesse Jackson comment, that people will realize that this is not about race. This is about capitalism and globalization and what has happened in the economics of the world through the World Trade and the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and World Trade Organization. You know, they're going to recognize this.
Do you think that Mrs. Clinton would settle for the vice presidency, especially if the party elders, the superdelegates, came to her and said, hey, yes, we could probably switch the two of you around, but, you know, we don't want riots in the streets, so you're going to have to take number two?
Yeah, I think she would have to do that, yes. But it'd be harder for her than it would be for him.
But to me, looking in from outside, that's a really interesting question. And to ask somebody from the sort of who lives in the sort of what I see as the deep south of the US, Fern, is do you think that the majority of America is ready to elect a black man as president?
I think, well, you'd have to say what the higher educated would be ready. The people that have been struggling all the time because of the DNCs, the games that have been played in America for the last 400 years, it'd be very difficult for them.
So, this is a great subject, and Justin and I have spoken about it on the show, and we've asked other guests, is, you know, do the Democrats actually have to sit down and maybe the superdelegates and some of the people controlling the party behind, do they have to sit down and say, who gives us the best chance to win the presidency rather
and
than
the irony
who's
of that
the
is that but the irony of that is that both of them bring to the table certain, you know, states that can win in the general, okay? And mm-hmm. they both are connected to the hip. Neither one of them could bring it in by themselves.
And I suppose if I was sitting there and I was, you know, someone who works for the Republican Party, I'd almost be wanting the two of them to carry on slugging it out until the
sure.
Democratic
election. Of course.
You know, what's it? Because, you know, you could argue and say that the Republicans are a split party, and in reality, every political party is. But at least the Republicans can now start to coalesce around one single candidate and try and put some sticky tape or scotch tape over the gaps and things. At least they can start to try and appear to the American people.
Uh-huh. But also, too, you got to look at Senator John McCain's history of being a maverick in the Republican Party. The Republican Party is One thing that they have in the Republican Party that the Democrats don't have is that the 13th, how can I say this? Thou shalt not talk bad about the fellow Republican. I think this is probably the first time in a long time that Republicans really duked it out in the primaries, because the Republican Party will coalesce and it will come back together again because of how they operate. The Democrats have so many different multiplicities of types of groups of people that are under that umbrella that it's imperative that they don't, just go down the tubes. This time, it's imperative, and they know that.
I'm just interested because, you know, the U.S., the U.K., you know, and several other countries are at war. How much does the fact that John McCain is a war veteran, you know, fought in Vietnam, how much do you think that actually influences people, that he's, you know, prepared to sacrifice his life for his country?
Well, that means a lot for a lot of people that really, especially that have been in, that have fought in different skirmishes. That's very important, especially of his time being a POW. But the thing is that the war, this current skirmish that we have in Iraq is taking so much of our funds that they want to look at how can we solve this issue and not spend all this money and then try to start bringing some of these troops back. Yes, John McCain said, well, you know, we're in Korea still and we're still in parts of as a result of the Second World War. And so if people were fought in the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the First Iraq War, and other places that we have sent troops are very patriotic. They really respect him as being a fighter. And so neither Clinton nor Obama have fought in any war. So, yes, there would be great respect for him.
That's interesting because it's something that we have to live with as well, because, you know, we're deeply entwined in Iraq and Afghanistan along with the Americans. And I absolutely have to agree with you. The amount of money that's being spent on this one, if they diverted it through to, you know, not only in the UK, but also in the US, you know, just how much difference would it actually make if they put the billions of dollars that are being spent on fighting the wars back into the US economy?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you create chaos and like some of the wars stories that are coming out in reference to Iran, those situations. But what happened to South Korea? We were hearing about South Korea a year ago. How did they become silent all of a sudden? What's happening in Venezuela with Hugo Chavez? What's happening in Cuba? What's happening with Russia, Afghanistan? There's so many hot spots over in Africa and Kenya and Mozambique and Zimbabwe. You got all of these places that have all these problems that are going on. And the United States has lost a lot of its reputation because of working together. Would we have to have somebody come in from the United Nations and take over the United States? I don't think so.
Ooh, don't say that.
I've got the perfect solution for you here, Fern. All you have to do is apologize to the British Queen, throw away the Declaration of Independence, and we'll welcome you back.
Okay, 1776, 1812, on to the Civil War. You'd welcome us back, huh?
I think we would. I mean, we'd have to do some things, like we'd have to get rid of this U.S. English and you'd have to learn to spell a few words differently. But other than that, I think we welcome you back with open arms, like cousins who have seen the light.
Now, that is really a good one. I like that.
Boy, I don't know what kind of light's in your eyes, Martin, there, but you need to step away from the lamp. Ouch.
Because there's a lot of people believe that that's what another game do.
I've certainly seen a few threads about potentially someone having to step in and run the U.S., which I think is that makes very interesting reading and the whole thought process of who might want to do it. I mean, ultimately, could China step in and do that? Because it's got so much of your debt. You know, how much of the country does China actually own?
Is it about 40%? Is that right?
It feels like it.
It's up there, you know? And a lot of the decisions that were made under Bill Clinton's watch have a lot to do with NAFTA, have a lot to do with where we are today in globalization, even with the welfare reform. Bill Clinton sometimes acts more Republican than he did Democrat.
I know that these trade issues are very important to you, and at some future point, I'd like to have you come back to talk to Martin and I about just the whole North American Union thing. But for the moment, I'd like to wrap up by asking you, what's your favorite thing about Mississippi?
What's my favorite thing about Mississippi? The weather and the people and the food. Oh, I'm sitting on 2 acres. It looks like a park where I live, but I'm in the city. Okay? When people come here from my hometown in San Diego, they say, oh, this is the country. No, this is the city. And it's just beautiful. It is just absolutely beautiful. And then the food is so good.
I was going to say, presumably if I ever look you up, I can get some proper Southern fried chicken.
Oh, yes, you can. Okay, you can really get that. I don't cook that too well myself, but my son does, and he can really cook you up. So y'all need to come, as they said, y'all need to come on down here.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, Fern, and we hope to hear from you again in the future. Please do me just one small favor, and just try to have a little of that fried chicken for me here sometime real soon.
Okay, well, you know, I could email it to you.
I can just see the visit from Homeland Security over that one.
So, Fern, here's the deal.
We'll do a Stargate, okay?
Yeah, but here's the deal.
They're not supposed to know about that.
If Justin's worried about Homeland Security, I don't need to worry about that one. So you can email me your Southern Fried Chicken. I'll take everything you've got.
Okay, and we'll send you some greens, too, with a little hot water cornbread, okay?
Oh, golly. Oh, I'm going to be booking me ticket now.
All right, y'all have a great day. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was a great interview. I have to say, someone who's happy to talk about many things and has got a effervescent, bubbly personality, and that came across here. We're going to have to get Fern back on the show at some later date.
Yeah, and how we got fried chicken involved in national security, I don't know.
Hey, between us, we're good, Justin.
Well, hey, if you like what you heard today here, I'd like to encourage our listeners to please drop us a note. Surf on over to ATS, find the ATS Mix show area, find the appropriate show thread, and tell us what you think. Just don't tease me with fried chicken.
Send it all to me instead. I've got a special U to U box now. And if you'd like to recommend an interview, hey, do the same thing. Put it on the show thread, U to U, Justin and I. We welcome all those U to U's. We answer them. We look at them. Yeah, sometimes I look and think I've got too many, but I'd rather have too many than not enough. And also, if there's a breaking hot story, let us know. Remember, one of our first interviews was with an ATS member who felt she'd been disenfranchised. If you've got something interesting, come along.
Absolutely. You can start the Martin and Justin fan club anytime you want. Otherwise, please feel free to check out the other fine shows put out by the Above Network LLC.
I like the idea of a fan club. Do you reckon we're going to have the Above Politics Show groupies then, Justin?
Well, we shouldn't probably talk about that on the air. There could be some sort of FCC violation involved.
There could be. We could have chapters all around the world. It'll be the best kind of regional politics.
Oh, you're just not going to let that go, are you?
Nope, I'm going to keep rubbing that one in, because to me, regional politics is everything outside the UK. On that happy note, I'm Martin Bain.
And I'm Justin Case. We'll see you next time on the Above Politics Show.